This is episode 683 of the AWS podcast, released on September 2nd, 2024.
Welcome back to the AWS podcast. I'm your host for today, Jillian Ford, and we've got a remarkable story today about a company was able to onboard 23 million new customers in 18 days. That is absolutely remarkable. We're going to talk about how they were able to do that, and of course, using AWS. I've got a phenomenal guest with me today, Danielle, who goes by DR, CEO of Totogi. So DR, tell us more about you and Totogi.
Yeah, no, I am telco famous, really well known in the telco industry. I've been working really hard to be known by everyone in the telecom industry. But yeah, everyone calls me DR, my initials. I'm not a doctor. But yeah, I am CEO of a vertical SaaS company named Totogi that focuses on really rewriting all of the software of the telecom industry, which, you know, if you look at it, it's like literally software that was written in the 80s that's been ported, you know, to different platforms. And, you know, this is, I think, one of the last industries to really move in a big way to the public cloud. And so I'm so lucky to kind of be seen as a visionary in the industry. And I'm like, am I a visionary if I'm doing what everyone else has already done? Is that visionary? I don't know. But it's been super fun and a great ride, and I'm super excited to talk about it today.
Well, I can definitely tell you that after this interview, people who are not in the telco industry are going to know you. So you'll be cloud famous.
Awesome. Great.
And because we've got really people from all different backgrounds, let's kind of start with really this story of a company that's a SaaS company being able to onboard 23 million new customers in 18 days. And maybe you can give some context of why it was that Totogi had to be able to onboard so many customers so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a startup, you're really looking for that product market fit and you're really trying to find, you know, your big breakthrough. And our very first product is a product that the telco industry refers to as charging. And everyone is familiar with charging. I'm in my 50s now, and I remember the AT&T commercials about, you know, calling grandma on nights and weekends. And that's because the rate or the charge for the call would be lower, right? The business day was like the expensive time to call long distance. We don't get charged for long distance anymore. I don't even know if we do because we don't have landlines anymore. But that same idea rolled over into when cell phones and mobile phones came about, right? This concept of rating and charging. And so the product area is old. It's been around since the 80s, right? And so all the telcos out there have a charger. And the charger is determining, you know, how much I'm going to charge you for the minutes of this phone call or that text message or the data that you're pulling down. Now, in the United States and in high revenue countries, we're postpaid. So meaning we pay a flat fee, we pay $60 a month or whatever it might be, and we get like unlimited on all these elements and we don't really get charged by the minute. But the majority of the world is prepaid, meaning it's almost like a debit card, where you have to put money into the telco first and then it deducts. And so the charger is really kind of like an ATM in the sky, right? It's like, do you have enough minutes to make this phone call? And then we deduct the thing. So this is their main monetization engine of their biggest asset, the network. And so it's super mission critical. And so we had this amazing situation happen with a customer of ours that kind of was the impetus for the situation that I'm happy to kind of expound on. But we got an amazing opportunity. And really, the only vendor in the world that could have solved this problem was literally Totogi because of our AWS first cloud-based SaaS-based architecture. So yeah, happy to tell you more about that story.
Yeah, I think if you could tell us more about, like, there's this company that you end up working with and what kind of came about to decide, like, hey, now you need to be able to quickly onboard so many customers.
Unfortunately, there's humanitarian crises in the world. You know, we hear about one that's going on in, you know, Israeli and in the Gaza Strip. But in Sudan, the UN considers it probably a bigger humanitarian crisis. And there's a civil war going on in the country. And, you know, the telcos in that country, every country has about three telcos, right? They have two or three, you know, government one and, you know, whatever. And most of these telcos still run their operations and the majority of their business software to run their business in on-premise data centers, right? And they run them, there's usually, you know, an active data center separated by 100 kilometers or whatever, you know, give them distance and things like that. But they're on the ground. They're old school. They're like the data centers of the 90s and the 2000s before the public cloud. And so we had been talking to them before this year, right? And they were worried that there would be maybe some sort of political or war action aimed at their data centers. You know, either electricity would be cut or they would be bombed. And what would be their business continuity plans? And so we had been talking to them, you know, we have a cloud thing. Maybe we could solve it that way. And internally at Totogi, we're like, okay, the scenario that they would actually use Totogi would be if data center one goes down and data center two goes down, then you'd use Totogi. So I was like, even a month before, our teams are like, is this a real sales cycle? We're not sure. So, right? It was even like, we were taking it seriously, but we're like, are they really going to buy this? We're not sure. Well, then the unthinkable happened, where both data centers lost electricity simultaneously, not just at this one telco or customer, but also all the telcos in the country. And so when you are in the middle of a civil war, where people send money through their phones, because in Africa, that's how a lot of unbanked people, a lot of mobile money. So you can't send money, right? You can't alert people where there's safe passage or not, or just being in touch with like friends and loved ones, like, are you safe? Literally, you can see on the graph, mobile network goes dead like February 4th of 2024. And they called us. And I mean, when a customer calls you at midnight on Friday night, to like talk commercials. Okay, this is now a real sales cycle. If we had any doubt, they're pretty serious. And they're like, yeah, we've lost everything. We need a cloud solution. We need it right now. Can you do it? And can you get this running in 2 weeks? Now, this kind of system usually takes at least 6 months, and that's considered quick. 6 months to install. Usually it's about a year. And the world's biggest telco companies are usually the best at it. Ericsson, Huawei, Nokia, Amdocs, like these big companies. But they didn't have cloud solutions. And we're like, I don't know if we can do it in 2 weeks. I like the way you're thinking. Let's go for it. And we missed it by 4 days and we did it in 18 days. And it was onboarding all of their consumers, and they call them subscribers, all of their customers into our system. And we had to work like 24/7. We were using the global clock. I was using Asia workers, North America workers, EMEA workers, people sleeping whenever they could, but we got them up and running. And really, I mean, really saving lives. It's insane. Like people come up to me and they're like, I want to take my picture with the woman that saved millions of people's lives because he restored mobile network connectivity to the country. And I'm like, really? Wow. It's insane.
It's absolutely remarkable. And being able to onboard all of those customers so quickly, it just definitely makes me wonder, okay, when you decided, all right, we're going to have to onboard all these customers in such a short period of time, from the actual cloud perspective, was there anything that you had to actually do to be able to, whether it's change in the architecture, maybe some of the technical processes in order to be able to get all those customers onboarded?
Yeah, I mean, we had some of the processes because we've been onboarding customers, but nothing at this scale, right? We're talking like, you know, a million subscribers, hundreds of thousands. But when you're talking, hey, here's a file with, you know, 23 million customers, it's really going to put your organization and your processes to the test. And when you're working with AWS, like they kind of know what your workloads look like. And they have some making sure that you don't have a process going rogue and overcharging. And so AWS has some natural guardrails around customer workloads. And so the first thing we did was like, yo, AWS, watch out, because this is DynamoDB is about to go crazy and it's intentional. And so it was really important us to partner with AWS and keep them abreast of what we were doing. It wasn't like a switch and we turned on the network all at once. We really kind of rolled out city by city very quickly. And those workloads were scaling a ton. I mean, we just overnight went vertical. And we kind of over-provisioned intentionally to make sure we weren't having any sort of like throttling, or even though, I mean, these are cold starts. And so even though they take minutes in telco time, that's too long. We need milliseconds. And so we were kind of front running and a little bit over provisioned just to make sure that the workload wouldn't be throttled or have any issues. And then over the course of the last couple of months, we've been kind of right sizing it to make sure that it can scale fast enough and we have enough room and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, we didn't have to change our product at all. It was ready to go. I'll be honest. I was a little bit like, is this going to work, guys? And they were like, theoretically, it should. And we had worked with amazing solution architects at AWS who had reviewed our design. And we kind of take this approach of WWAWSD, like what would AWS do?
I love that.
If they were designing a product using 100% AWS services to the hilt, we're not designing to be cloud agnostic. We're not trying to be multi-cloud fancy. We're not trying to do, you know, you can run it wherever you want. You tell us where. We're like, no, this is a service, kind of like Salesforce, but for a mission critical workload like charging, right? But design this the way AWS would do. They would not use Kubernetes. You guys would use Lambda. You wouldn't use an agnostic database. Use DynamoDB. And so all of that stuff, our engineers are like, we can write that. I'm like, shut up. We're going to use AWS services. And it's made our not only our product better and more resilient, because we're riding the innovation wave of AWS. I mean, we're just betting so big on you guys that you continue to expand on regions. You continue to invest in your chips. You continue to build amazing services that are going to keep coming out. The roadmaps of the services you have are just better than we can do. And we're riding that wave. And then we just build our telco industry specific solution on top of it. And so our product keeps getting cheaper and it keeps getting better and our customers benefit from it. And so, yeah, I'm like so tied in with AWS. I'm not just cloud first, I'm AWS first.
I love definitely being able to hear that. And I think that also resonates with a lot of the listeners here who are really thinking about the right approach to be able to design their business. And especially if something, every company, I guess, really hopes that there's some type of event like this where they're able to onboard new customers or just planning for the unexpected. Like things obviously happened. People saw that with COVID, where maybe some people had a lot more customers to their business. And being able to hear from your experience, I think, is certainly going to be able to help them. Could you tell us a little bit more about when you started working with AWS and what was the architecture like? What was the actual like planning process for just so people here, they can be able to learn from your experience?
It was a conscious choice to pick AWS as our hyperscaler. In a previous job, I had been working with Google Cloud, but a key, especially in my industry, because it's so global in nature, it's highly regulated, where data sovereignty and data regulation is actually a pretty important topic. And it's legit, right? There's country by country, we have to like go look up the regulations. I needed a hyperscaler that was thinking about building out regions. And right or wrong, we had this thesis that Amazon retail, you were continuing to build out fulfillment centers and coupled with that, data centers, and that your best bet for growth on the cloud side is opening up more and more regions. I mean, this is a $1 trillion CapEx investment. That was like really important to us. We needed a hyperscaler that was going to build out a lot of regions and a lot of countries so that our customers, our telco customers, could legit use it, right? It's not everywhere. There's a lot of places where it's an intersection. Like if you think about GDPR in Europe, there's a list of countries where you can move your data safely in this small subset of European countries. And there's almost always an AWS region there. So that's nice, right? Like it doesn't have to be in your country, but it needs to be in a, here's a small list, right? And there's Switzerland, there's Germany, there's choices. So it's really great. So that was like one of our first guiding principles around engineering is like, it's going to be AWS. And we're like, if it's going to be AWS, then we're all in. We're not going to like hedge our bets and like change cloud providers later. So yeah, use Graviton, right? Don't sit there and go Intel chips because we might leave later and we're not sure. And these are bold bets. We're either right or we're wrong. We're one of the two. We're not on the fence. We're like 2 feet in. And so from there, there's a lot of decisions that come in terms of our architecture, but it became very easy. You just keep picking AWS. Is there an AWS service for this topic that we need? There is. There's Kinesis. Let's use that. So it became really, really easy. And these are like, I always tell people, they're like Lego pieces. They're building blocks. It really accelerates your application development time. They're battle tested. They're robust. They've been tested by, I don't even know how many API calls. So we love all of that stuff. And we try to like infuse that culture and that thinking into our company. We're so invested with AWS, for sure.
And I'd love to hear more about like the architecture and also like your engineering team as well that was able to handle like all of these new customers that were on the platform. So I heard on the architecture side, I heard you said that you were using Graviton, you said Kinesis, DynamoDB.
Let's just start with the most important component in the application, which is the database. This is a transactional database. You are checking if the, like I described earlier, you're checking if the consumer has balance. And if they are, you got to record it in a call record. I mean, if you remember, I mean, you're clearly younger than me, but back in the 90s, we would get packages from your cell phone provider of all your call records to prove the billing, right? I charged you $1 for that text message. I charged you 36 cents for the call, right? And so they would send you the call records, CDRs. We now call them EDRs, electronic data records. This is the key to this product. It's all about the database, not just for ours, for our implementation of it. Any charger, it starts with the database. And I'll be honest, a lot of the old school legacy databases use Oracle because it was like the world's best enterprise database. But DynamoDB handles Prime Day, which you guys just had, and I can't wait. You guys always publish like the ridiculous stats of how AWS handled all the Prime Day transactions. And that's way more transactions than what we're doing. And so we're like, if it's good enough for AWS, it's going to be good enough for us. And so we use a single table database, DynamoDB. And that's really a big part of the product. And we kind of, everything else is really small. It's, you know, I'm always asking AWS for discounts. I'm like, please give me a discount on DynamoDB. Because it's literally like, I think like 80% of my cost. It's a big part of it. The architecture, I could pull my engineers. I'm kind of a little bit far away from all the like specific stuff. I know enough to be dangerous, but I know that the key is DynamoDB and everything else is kind of driven off of that.
Yeah, DR, I'd love to hear more about the architecture. I know earlier you were talking about Kinesis, you're using Graviton, DynamoDB. It sounds like maybe DynamoDB might be a big part. So maybe you can elaborate really on how you're using it.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not the architect and engineer. I have like just an amazing, fabulous team that really kind of can talk all the bits about how we designed it. But I do know this. This product is really designed around the transactional nature of the product. And that really is the database. 80% of our cost comes from DynamoDB. I'm always kidding my AWS rep, like, you know, hey, give me a bigger discount because it's such a big piece of it. But the legacy traditional vendors have been using Oracle. Oracle famously has been known to be one of the best enterprise capable databases. Larry Ellison is super proud of that. But you know what? DynamoDB handles Prime Day. It handles if not approaching trillion transactions in minutes and seconds as all your retail consumers are coming on and buying all the retail products. And so this product is very transactional. You need to check the balance. You got to record the call record, and the call record is mandated by law to show like it's the billing, what I charged you for all your records. And so that's the crux. And so once we selected DynamoDB, again, with that AWS first mentality, right, we're not going to pick, you know, a third party product and be cloud agnostic because we might switch later. But we're like, no, let's start with what does AWS have? Okay, it's DynamoDB. It's a little bit expensive, but it's the right choice. And then everything else kind of falls from there. And so it's pretty easy.
It sounds like, I mean, with the architecture that your team really had worked with in the beginning and your just perspective on how you were going to best utilize AWS was able to allow you to be able to onboard to so many customers like within such a short period of time. So that's truly remarkable. But I'm curious if there was anything else that maybe you had wished you had done before that.
Had any advance warning whatsoever. Would have been nice. Like I said, you know, the way that this sales cycle kind of came to fruition, we had designed it. We had designed how we would do this and how this product would work in a business continuity setting was the original sketch of the first product. And frankly, you know, I was kind of biting my nails of like, is this going to work? But again, we had vetted it with some of the primary architects of DynamoDB. And they had given us ideas on how to better design it. We had vetted it with AWS engineer, you know, architects and engineers, say like WWAWSD, like, what are we not thinking of? What could we do better? Okay, let's go do that. We had done some scaling tests with synthetic data. We had scaled to 1 billion transactions per second, which is less than what DynamoDB does on Prime Day. And that would approximately handle all the charging volume of a continent. Maybe not India. You might need a second instance for India because they're like at 1-3 billion subscribers. You might need a second instance for Africa. The telcos have one charger or multiple chargers per telco. And when you think about what they're running, right? When you think about this on-premise workload, and this isn't a telco-specific thing. This is like old school industries. You have your primary key mission-critical product. You have bought and provisioned capacity to handle fluctuations in workload. It could be a 911 system. It could be, you know, it could be anything, right? Like you have these unexpected events. Some events are like holidays, people are calling, but it could be a natural disaster, could be a flood or whatever else. And so the IT team doesn't want to be the guys that under provision to save money. So they ask the vendors, hey, provision this for our capacity. And then they bump it up by another 20, 30%. So usually you have over provisioned capacity. This is just compute on the ground purchased from EMC, Dell, whatever, HP. Those guys are loving it. They're running hot, but they're not being used. Now you think about business continuity. Okay, now you're just going to double it. It's a whole copy of another system. It's software. It's hardware. It's maintenance. It's support. It's security testing, patching. All of that work is going on. And this is just such an interesting use case for the public cloud. To say, okay, for all the enterprise executives listening to this, where they're like, I'm afraid, oh, my mission critical workloads, you're insane, DR. I'm like, try it with your business continuity stuff that's not even being used right now. Like half the time when there is a disaster, you don't flip over to your DR system, not me, but disaster recovery. You don't flip over and use it because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You haven't tested it in months and you're afraid to flip over. And so you're asking your vendor, hey, when will this be ready? And the vendor's like, oh, give me one more hour. And you're like, okay, we're not going to go through the whole trouble. But imagine if the system was essentially free because it ran in the cloud and you only paid when you needed it, when you used it. So we first priced this for Zain Sudan. We're like, you're going to need this like 1 or 2 days a year. And so we'll charge you a little fee to make sure everything's plugged in. But when you flip it over, it's just going to work. And so it's such a great, interesting use case to start to dip your toe into using AWS. But you need to pick an important area of business that matters. It can't be, oh, our docs are safe. I mean, people care, but right. But when you're like, I flipped over the public cloud, I kept our network up and our revenue going, and we didn't miss a beat, and then we could fail back to our old safe systems. I didn't really change anything. I call this a two-way door. I walked over to the public cloud, but then I was able to come back. No harm, no foul. One-way doors are scary. I moved to the public cloud. I can't move back. I'm scared. But two-way doors let you go and come back. And like, why don't you do that with disaster recovery, which is, I mean, it's a waste of money that you have to spend on. You'd be insane not to have it, but it just sits there and no one ever uses it. We think this is a really cool idea for telco, but like, I mean, any highly regulated, slow-moving industry that's afraid of the public cloud, why don't you start with disaster recovery and business continuity? But again, business value workloads, like things that really matter, not the easy stuff you've already moved.
Totally. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that piece of advice. So DR, I've got one last question. And this one is really for the listeners here who they either work at a company that's in a regulated industry, or maybe they work at a company that still has a lot of applications that are on-prem, and they're starting to kind of dabble with the cloud. And now looking at how they can adopt generative AI. So I'd love to understand how you're thinking about this and any advice for those types of companies to look at generative AI to be able to innovate.
In a nutshell and in a soundbite, I would say if you weren't already in the cloud already, then you really are going to want to be in the public cloud because of generative AI. Getting access to multiple foundational models, making sure that your data is safe and not getting into the training models. Being able to experiment rapidly and use customized chips like Inferentia and Trainium. I mean, these are just gifts from Amazon and AWS. Amazon Bedrock, I think, is 100% geared towards enterprises that want to build AI applications. And it's different than what I'm seeing at the other hyperscalers. I mean, everyone has their pros and cons. I mean, this is a marathon, but everyone's running it like a sprint. It's the biggest change we've seen. And public cloud was a big change, but this is going to change work as we know it, probably in the biggest way, and certainly my lifetime. And so I talk to telcos in these regulated, it's a highly regulated industry, and they're like still fighting about, oh, the hyperscalers trying to, you know, steal my data, you know, is my data safe and all this other stuff. And I'm like, the hyperscalers don't want to move into telco. You guys have proven that that is like a very difficult business to run and grow. They are growing like crazy, making sure that they're supporting the enterprises of the world. If they were to make a move, I mean, well, you're totally right. They have the cash and the capability and the technical chops to move into any industry in the world that they want to. So they can, but you have to think, will they? And they won't, because if they started to do this, then everyone would completely contract from the public cloud and it would be over. So it'd be dumb for them to do this. So, you know, while it's possible, it's not likely. So now that you've kind of gotten over the trust factor with the hyperscalers, they're bringing you gifts to accelerate your move to the biggest change that we've seen in technology. And we've seen some big changes, huge, big. If I'm in a regulated industry, first mover advantage to use this in a major, big way, I'm doing it. I mean, absolutely. Everyone moves all slow and they're like looking at, you know, what are you doing? What, you know, what are my competitors doing? But if one person moved in a big way and did it right, the other guys would have to follow. And so I'd be moving aggressively forward and I would be all in on public cloud and just going crazy on generative AI for sure.
I love it. With that mic drop moment, DR, I am so happy and grateful that you came to the AWS podcast today. I appreciate your time and thank you so much for sharing your advice to the listeners here on the AWS podcast.
Go cloud, go generative AI, and thank you so much, Jillian. This was super great. Thank you.